It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And from Harvell & Collins, attorneys of law, the right advice at the right time, Cecil Harvell is with us. Hi, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
We're doing well. Okay.
Good.
We've been talking about the court system the last couple of weeks.
We have been. I think that it's good to continue to kind of demystify, if you will, and explain in a general way the court system and where does one file their lawsuit for what.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, of course, Ben, we all try to avoid lawsuits. Even here as a lawyer, I suggest that our listeners try to avoid lawsuits,
right,
if at
right.
all possible, because they are time intensive, they are costly. And they are, you know, emotional and psychologically, many times very heavy to carry.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we can settle our disputes, that's always best. But of course, with that being said, our courts are busier than ever. Now, we talked about over the last few weeks, let's review a bit, that the jurisdictional limit for the small claims court is $10,000.
Right.
Anything over $10,000 will either go to district court or superior court of a civil nature.
Mm-hmm.
That means a dispute between two entities or individuals. Those are called our civil cases.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of criminal cases, our misdemeanors and traffic cases vest in the district court.
Right.
It's a very, very busy place. And then, of course, our felony cases, felony criminal cases vest in the superior court. Now, these courts, both the district court and the superior court, are trial courts. This is where facts are determined, conclusions are made, and judgments are rendered either for the plaintiff or the defendant. They are factual determination venues,
mm-hmm.
if you will, Ben. After we finish at the trial court level, then there is our appellate court.
Right.
And our appellate courts, of course, are things such as the North Carolina Supreme Court, the North Carolina Court of Appeals. And these courts, as we mentioned last week, I believe, sit more or less like, if you will, a committee.
Right.
They are called
right.
panels,
mm-hmm.
but they sit as like a committee. They hear the arguments from the attorneys of what happened on the trial court level,
mm-hmm.
and they then make a decision as to whether the trial court decision should be affirmed or whether it should be reversed or remanded for some reason, sent back to determine some issue that didn't quite get determined as this panel that sits on an appellate level thinks that it should, thinks that this should have occurred.
Well, as we have talked about before, cases that originate in district or superior court,
yes.
often you're coming in as an attorney with a big open funnel, and you're trying to narrow down the issues, the facts, and getting to the heart of the matter.
Correct.
And then when it comes to appealing, then it's you can only be arguing certain points that are part of the provenance of the appeal. I mean it doesn't just start over.
It doesn't. That's a very good point, Ben. Litigation by nature, is a refining,
mm-hmm.
Journey. The issues become more and more precise, more and more limited, because after all, the court cannot just allow, every issue to
mm-hmm.
be discussed, every particular witness, every particular document. We've talked about on the program before that there are motions before the case will go to trial, if
mm-hmm.
you will, where certain documents are excluded. Certain testimony is excluded. Certain issues are no longer on the table for decision. This is really kind of called, you know, if you will, carving or whittling down the issues so that the case is more focused. And then, of course, finally, there is a decision made by this trial court at the trial court level. And as you were saying, those decisions would be even more highly focused at the appellate level. Now, we also, of course, have have juvenile matters, matters concerning our minors.
Mm-hmm.
Those are held in district court.
Right.
And we have matters concerning our family law,
yeah,
divorce, separation,
domestic
equitable
law,
distribution, yeah, child custody. Those are at the district court level. And of course, as we've spoken many times on this program in North Carolina, which is unique relative to this issue, estate matters, wills, things of that nature are original exclusive jurisdiction with the clerk.
Mm-hmm.
The clerk sits as
right,
the quote trier of fact.
And it's helpful to know it's the clerk of Superior Court.
It is the clerk of Superior Court,
right,
who of course is an elected official.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the ones who, in our county, that's Pam Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, there is a clerk of Superior Court elected in each and every county. And they then sit as the trier, if you will, in probate matters.
Right.
So this is kind of the lineup, if you will, of answering the question, you know, where do I go for what?
Mm-hmm.
Many times friends, neighbors, just clients, in general will call and say, I need to go do such and such. Where
right,
do I go?
Right.
It's really sometimes, you know, a challenge just to know, you know, where do I acclimate myself toward in the court system?
Mm-hmm. Now, because we've talked about even at the very basic, at the, if you're going in under the, $10,000 limit, you're going to magistrates or small
correct,
claims court. That if you appeal that, it's an appeal de novo where it starts over.
It
but,
is.
But that's about the only place that happens, right? I mean, you don't get a de novo. You don't get a start over, a do-over, and other levels.
I agree with that. And let's talk about what that means. If the jurisdictional amount is $10,000 or less, then yes, as we've discussed, it can start at the magistrate court level. Now, what will then happen, of course, is that sometimes folks will use this as an opportunity to kind of, either settle the case,
mm-hmm,
or to get additional facts, additional documents, to understand more, the discovery process
right,
in a matter. And then depending on the outcome, absolutely, they can then start that case from the very beginning,
mm-hmm,
at the district court level.
And now maybe better armed.
And now better armed, yeah, more information, more documents. They mm-hmm, know which witnesses and what those witnesses are going to happen to say. So some folks will use the magistrate court as an opportunity to discover more facts concerning their case. Also, of course, in magistrate court, Ben, are our landlord-tenant issues.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, you know, that's, again, a very active court. There are lots of disputes, unfortunately, between tenants and their landlord or landlord and their tenant, return of security deposits, damages to the apartment, whatever
mm-hmm,
the case might be, abandonment of the apartment, all of those kinds of issues, again, begin at the magistrate court level. Of course, there's the right to appeal
mm-hmm,
to the district court.
Now, if someone is seeking recovery from in a liability case, for example, mm-hmm, does that start at Superior Court, or is that?
Well, it depends on the
amount.
On the jurisdictional amount,
mm-hmm,
and of course, if it vests in Superior Court, then those are going to be, you know, your larger high dollar cases,
mm-hmm,
you know, tragic automobile accidents, product liability cases, medical malpractice cases, disputes concerning real property or land disputes that are of a significant nature,
mm-hmm,
not just a trespass,
right,
or you know
right,
something of that nature. That would again be probably down in district court.
Mm-hmm.
All of these courts serve their extraordinarily valuable service to our community, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
The district court is not to be underestimated in any stretch of the imagination.
Probably the busiest court in the
land. For heaven's sakes. I mean, as I said earlier, it concerns the well-being of our children
mm-hmm,
in the district court or the juvenile court. It concerns our our divorces, mm-hmm. you know, equitable distribution, child custody. Those are very, very important.
Not to
mention the that are involved in those.
Not to mention the criminal side. So
not to mention the criminal side,
so
although
it's a full calendar.
Although it's misdemeanor at that level, still very important. The driving while under the influence, the any kind of traffic violation, any kind of trespass, petty theft, a lot of your minor drug possession cases, all mm-hmm. of those are going to be in the district court. The felony cases are in the superior court.
It is a, again, it's a, it, it's a parallel system between civil and criminal courts. And, but it also uses the same rooms and same judges. So it gets pretty clogged in there. So.
And that, and our listeners might have some questions about that. It's not, Ben, I think that, you know, of course, and most of our listeners eventually, if they think about it, would begin to understand that it's not like, you know, in the morning we hear a civil case, like a, like say a product liability case, and then that afternoon we're in a murder trial mm-hmm. in Superior Court, let's say. There are sessions, and there are sessions of the criminal cases,
mm-hmm. right.
the docket, if you will, and they are all the criminal cases. The Superior Court is having one of its, a lawyer would say, one of its criminal sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then those sessions conclude. Maybe they're a week, 2 weeks, and then there's a civil
right.
session.
Right.
And then that's, of course, when the court would then hear the civil cases. So it's, as one would expect, very organized. There, of course, are as our trial court administrators
mm-hmm.
who keep all of these cases in the right place at just the right time, print the calendars, notify the lawyers, communicate things that need to be communicated to the lawyers about their cases
mm-hmm.
from the particular judge, if necessary, that the judge will be on vacation this particular week during the year 2017. Those are all issues. There has to be this kind of, if you will, secretarial work,
oh,
and
yeah.
it's done by the trial court administrators.
Yeah, and again, that organization is a difficult, time-consuming, but extremely important task. We'll have more to come in just a moment here on a Coastal Daybreak. If you'd like to ask questions, again, about the court system, how that works, you can give us a call, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Cecil Harvell with us as we're going through the court system today.
Ben, one of the things that is interesting to talk about is that, you know, these cases, particularly the civil cases, of course the criminal cases really as well, but let's hone in right now on the civil cases. You know, they take a long time, Ben, and our listeners might be intrigued by that. I mean, when a lawyer files a case in Superior Court, the defendant then has to be served.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that can take, you know, a week or two, depending on where they happen to be.
Right.
Sometimes they're served by registered mail or certified mail. Sometimes they're served by the sheriff. Sometimes they're served by publication
mm-hmm.
in the newspaper. So the service process takes some time. After the defendant is served, that's when, of course, the deadline is told, if you will, for them to be able to file a response,
mm-hmm.
their responsive pleading, known as many times as an answer, counterclaim, anything that puts forth some defenses. That time limit is generally 30 days, but it can be extended
mm-hmm.
easily without motion before the court. So here we go now. I mean, right there can be, you know, 60 days
yep.
plus a couple of weeks. You're pushing,
you're
if
3 months
you will,
there now.
3 months right there.
And you've just started.
Mm-hmm. Then, of course, once there are pleadings on both sides of the aisle, now we begin the discovery process, which
mm-hmm.
are, you know, a court supervised process for depositions, recovery of requests for documents,
mm-hmm.
requests for that certain answers to questions be answered, known as interrogatories. This is the discovery process. And the purpose of this is so that, again, as we talked earlier, the case can become more and more focused. What are exactly the issues before the court that will be the subject of the trial when we get there? We're not just going to allow any kind of document, any kind of witness, any kind of testimony. We've got to spend some time here focusing the issues so that when it gets to trial before a judge and a jury, you know, there is some organization. There, it's not a case that's just going to go on, you know, indefinitely. So this is called the discovery process. This can be easily 6 months, 9 months, depending on the type of case and the complexity of the civil matter. But, this is a procedure that is outlined in the local court rules and, and between the lawyers, if you will. If there is then a problem during the discovery process, then the judge may need to intervene.
Right. In other words, you're not getting everything that you've asked for that you know exists.
Correct. Then you might have to have a motion to compel the discovery or to compel a witness or to exclude a witness from being able to say certain testimony. By and large, the discovery operates between the lawyers at their respective offices over the course of, say, this 3 to 6 month period without the involvement of the judge who is overseeing the case. But not always. There are times, as we're mentioning, where even in the discovery process, we need the intervention of the judge, their guidance on a particular issue. And if so, then we have to wait for that judge to be available.
Right. Right. Yeah. They're not just there waiting by the phone.
We can't go ask the judge to compel certain documents to be presented when the judge is in the middle of a murder trial. So, litigation by its nature, is time consuming. Then, of course, finally, when we get to a point that the discovery is completed, many times the lawyers then, as you can imagine, and the case more specifically, has to wait its turn.
Right.
There are other cases that have been filed ahead of this case. And even though this case is now more or less ready for trial, the motions have been heard, the discovery has been completed, it then has to wait its turn.
Are depositions part of the discovery?
Yes. Yeah. Depositions are a critical a subcategory of what we mean when we say discovery. Discovery is a deposition.
Well, that's actually sworn testimony.
It is. Yeah. A request for documentation, request for certain answers to certain questions. That's known as interrogatories. These are all the various types of discovery.
Okay. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with more from Harvell and Collins, Attorneys of Law, here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Your questions are welcome at 800-818-2255. Where are these local numbers?
247-7282 or 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning from Harvell and Collins. Of course, you can go and find out more information online at harvellandcollins.com. We're talking about the legal system, and we've gotten kind of to the court now, actually, with a motion before the court.
We have. We've gotten through the discovery process, and maybe the case now is ready for trial, and finally that the party the turn has come. Then of course the case is tried, as one can imagine, and then of course there is a determination known as a judgment. Even at that point, Ben, and you brought this up last week, I believe. You know, once there's a judgment, the case can either be appealed. to these appellate courts that sit as panels because of an issue that occurred during the trial court that either one party or the other does not think is consistent with the law in the state of North Carolina. And so, therefore, they can appeal. Mm-hmm. There is then a stay of the judgment pending the outcome of the appeal, which, by the way, can absolutely take a year, just the appeal. Or if there is no appeal, then yes, the prevailing party has a judgment, but a judgment, you know, Ben, as we know, is a piece of paper.
Right.
It's not a check for $10,000. It's not, you know, it's not necessarily, collectible.
There's not money waiting.
It's not money in the bank.
Yeah.
And so we move into a complete total body of law known as the execution of a judgment. So as to enforce the terminology of the judgment.
I think that's what it probably infuriates a lot of people is that
Yes, it does.
They wonder whether or not the judgment is going to be enough.
Correct. And when will they collect it? And whether or not the defendant is what we call judgment proof. Okay. And things of that nature. Maybe the judgment is against a corporation and the corporation now, you know, files bankruptcy. So there's a whole area of the law. At one, and it, Russell Alexander at our office kind of heads this area of the law up, known as, you know, the debtor-creditor relationship. And of course, this is what this is. Basically, a judgment holder is a creditor. They're a creditor. And the question is, what can they now do to obtain, to make that judgment real, to make it, quote, money in the bank, against the debtor? Can they lean again? Can they attempt to foreclose against the house or a piece of property or the vehicle or anything of that nature? So we have, we've got 30 seconds here, Ben, and I conclude with,
a little bit more than that.
Okay. And I conclude with the fact that litigation, is an extremely involved and complex and time consuming and then of course expensive proposition. And so if you are allowed to settle or to resolve your conflicts out of this system, here you're hearing a lawyer right now saying that's probably the best thing to do.
Right.
But there are just so many times when we are not able to do that. We're not able to resolve the conflict without the use of the judicial system.
Yes. Even then, we haven't even touched on arbitration, but even if you've gone through some sort of mitigation process, you may still end up in court and through appeals and be dragged on and never quite made whole again.
Correct. Yeah. Well, all of these courts that we talked about, well, not all of them, but quite a few of them have now in our law, you know, mandatory requirements that there be a mediation, that there be an effort to resolve the case. And your judges many times will attempt in every way prior to trial or at some point after a day or so of the trial to attempt to bring the lawyers together, of course, through their clients to resolve and or settle the cases.
Want to find out more? You want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, and you can reach them at harvellandcollins.com or call them at their office at 726-9050, 726-9050.